Welcome to the 92nd episode of the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast. I'm Quizmaster Lee, and I'm joined today by...
The Nine Deuce. This is Mark, the Quizmaster Davis.
It's lovely to see you in my video transmission screen here from my quarantine lab, my quarantine studio.
This is a lot like, what's that hit science fiction movie with HAL 9000? 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Arthur C. Clarke predicted this shit.
He knew. We didn't know why everybody was so far apart, but maybe this was it.
He's who, in case you're unaware, you might be going, whoa, Stanley Kubrick. No. Kubrick directed it.
Yes.
In collaboration with Arthur C. Clarke, who wrote the book and the screenplay as well at the same exact time.
Mm-hmm.
And like there are a couple, both.
Couple of differences in between the two. In the book, they're going to a different planet than they go to in the movie. I can't remember which is which, but I think in one of them, they're going to Jupiter, and one they're going to Saturn.
Yes, I think it's either Jupiter or Europa, one of Jupiter's moons.
Maybe
in 2001 in the movie. And I've never read the book, so I'm not too keen on that. But feel free to write in if you know.
Yes.
But yeah, good to see you, Mark.
It's good to see you. How are you over in your sterilized lab chamber?
Well, it's been great. Otherwise, apart from trivia, trivia's been terrible this week for me. Actually,
you've had a couple oopsies.
You've borne witness to all of it.
Yes, now that I have all of this luxury time, I can watch you fly.
Oh my gosh. So first of all, last week at the Southwest Florida Movie Trivia League, hosted by our friends Dallas and Elise, who you've heard on the podcast, I typed an answer into their chat, which is like the virtual equivalent of like shouting out an answer in a room.
Rookie mistake.
Yeah.
I felt kind of weird, kind of like with a kid on the leash, making it so all of the chat in the Zoom channel that I do coming to me, so that way that didn't happen. And I was like, am I overstepping my bounds? Am I being a little bit too fascist? But
no.
apparently not. Thank you for kind of making me feel good about that decision.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was a total accident. So, you know, the answer system is that you have to send them a chat answer. And I just got my chat windows mixed up. I was hanging out with the other players in the chat. And,
honest mistake.
Immediately tried to delete it. I saw it go out, and I was like, oh, wrong window. And I sat there and waited for the lag, and I was just watching Elisa's face, like, did it go through? And then I saw her the corners of her mouth, like, perk up in a smile, and I was like, I knew that. And like, no. And she's like, please don't write the answers in the chat.
And as soon as she said that, I was like, what nincompoop send the answer to the chat? And she's, and then I saw you type, oh, my bad. And I was like, oh, no, yes. It's Lee. Oh, no.
This nincompoop. This nincompoop right here.
Beautiful.
And then on my own trivia on Monday night, I misspelled a duplicate answer. So there was like the correct answer was on there twice, and one was spelled correctly and the other was not spelled correctly in the Twitch trivia that I've been hosting.
Oh, that was Vincent Van Gogh.
Right. And I dropped the G on one.
Yes.
And some people selected that and were complaining like, hey, can you adjust the points for that? And one, I can't do that because I'm using the QuizKit extension and I have no control over the point value structure.
Right.
Adding or subtracting. It's all automated. But two, that's kind of on you. I mean, at the end of the day, how do you not know how to spell Van Gogh? I mean, maybe you saw that and thought, oh, this is just a typo, but it's clearly the correct answer.
Right.
But I would hope that you'd see the other one, too. But at the end of the day, yeah, I mean, that's kind of my mess up.
Yeah. Just fallout from the speed, you know, the speed part of, that trivia is just trying to hit the button as quick as you can and being like, oh, fuck. God damn it.
Yeah. When you're playing a remote trivia, you got to answer if you're sure. If not, maybe just leave it alone.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
Yep. And, what else? Oh, yeah. And then on Thursday night, I read the wrong question several times in a row. Like, I would read the question ahead of time because there's such a short window of answer time.
Yes.
So in order, as you suggested, maybe read the answer or the question ahead of time and then advance to the question so you can answer select your answers. And so I was doing that, and it was going fine until I misread two in a row, and then I was unsure about where I was, in relation to what I was putting on the screen. There's kind of a limited control factor there with the extension too, but we were able to get back on track, thankfully, that night.
I'm glad you said that, because I was feeling partially responsible, because I was like, well, by the time you get done reading the question, we're already down to like 1500 points. And if someone has a clearer ability to read the question, it just seemed better if you pretty much just advanced right when the answers are being read or whatever. And then when that was happening, I was like, did I do this? Am I responsible for this? But I'm glad you liked the suggestion. So,
oh yeah, absolutely. I'm going to keep it around. I just need to sharpen up my organization factor when I'm doing the live streams. That's all.
You know, like we talked about last week, this is a huge learning curve for all of us. I mean, learning Twitch, learning Zoom, learning the best way to do this stuff. Not to mention the fact that we have players that are on devices that they can cheat on. In their own homes, for better or worse, playing on teams with people that are not there with them, that are communicating via the very things we tell them not to be on while we're doing trivia. It's very, very rocky, terrain, and we're all kind of trying to figure it out the best we can. You've been doing an amazing job. Your trivia has been a lot of fun. I've had a great time, and everybody that is listening, if you are free on Monday or Thursday nights, you absolutely should be involved in it, especially if you're already like involved in the Twitch world. It's a lot of fun. Yeah. And it's been awesome seeing, all of these people popping up. And I can't tell if all of them are, normal people that come to your trivia or it's just,
we've seen Manu, Ian, yes, Mo, yes, Evan. Yes. We've seen H-Bomb from Left of Sanity. We've seen our friends from Team Moist. We've seen our friends from Team Squeaky Chairs in the virtual trivia. Trivia Newton John. I hope I'm not missing anybody. We're going to get to a list of our winners. We'll be talking a little bit more about who's showing up to our virtual trivia. But thank you for the recommendation. It is we're a little insulated from the cheating aspect because it does have the point countdown. So even if you are looking up the answers, you're losing points.
Right.
Yours is like ultimate honor system. I think even the first week, the winners weren't even on video chat, basically. They were just audio only.
Yeah, and it's actually been something that's made me think about the Southwest Florida Movie League trivia, which I have just been bombing, by the way.
Movies, you think you know about movies.
Yeah, movies are not my thing. They have basically like a 1 minute, 1 to 2 minute answer period. And I've kind of flirted with the idea of doing something like that instead of all the six answers at once doing it. So you've got a minute to send in your answer. But I kind of feel like, outside of the realm of your trivia where you've got, where there's points allotted to how quick you answer, if you're going to cheat, whether you do it in 30 seconds or a minute and a half. If you're going to cheat, you're going to cheat. So all you can do is hope that they don't.
Right. Right. Well, with that said, do you want to go ahead and get into our weekly wrap up?
Lee, I'd love to do that.
All right. Okay. On Monday, March 30th, 2020, we held No Nonsense Trivia Challenge on Twitch. We did two quizzes. First up, for quiz number one, Daddy Wants Grits.
Yeah.
One, that would be Seth with 199,670 points. Ben Affleck and Max from Team Moist coming in second and third place, respectively. For our second quiz, it was H-Bomb and Friends, our team of Left of Sanity, with 246,776 points. In second place for that quiz, Kool-Aid from Team Moist. And in third place, Grantastic Glenn. Mark, how did your teams do on Wednesday night at your virtual Nice Guys Pizza Trivia?
They did well. We had a bunch of teams. We had, I think, 18 teams, something like that. Skylar and Greg had popped in and a bunch of other people.
Lots of multi-group teams, too. Multi-member teams.
Absolutely.
It's all through Zoom, so you can see everybody in the video chat.
Yes. And it's so great, everybody being able to see each other. Mike and Abby and Brett and Gina were back together again, trying to reclaim their title. However, unfortunately for them, Rachel and Scott were there with a sweep, 29 points in the first round, 52 points in the second, and a lovely 69 points in the third round.
I know.
Yeah, nice, as the kids say.
That was an impressive... They were just slaying every round, basically. And
yeah, one question wrong awesome in the see. First round, one question wrong in the second round, and two questions wrong in the third round.
And so, if memory serves, I got negative 15 points overall, I think, Kyle and I
did.
Together. Yeah,
the lowest score out of the teams, I'm afraid to say.
Yeah, it was sometimes you just have an off night. And we did a Hail Mary on the last answer. We wagered big.
And that's, got to do it.
Yep.
When you know you're floundering, you gotta just do the thing.
No regrets. On Thursday, April 2nd, we were back on Twitch for No Nonsense Trivia. Our first quiz that night, Thuminator from Team Squeaky Chairs won with 215,842 points. Grantastic Glenn coming in second place that night, or that quiz, and Oral Sex 23 in third place. Mm. That's oral like audio, A-U-R-A-L.
I don't care. Just say it a couple more times. I haven't felt human skin in so long.
Oral Sex 23.
Okay.
And did Grantastic Glenn win any of the quizzes this week in first place? Yes, he did. He won our second quiz on Thursday night with 400,000 points and some change. Patrick, my brother-in-law, getting second place that night. And Jameson and Brooke from Trivia Newton John getting third place overall. Congrats to them, to our other winning teams, and thanks to all for quizzing. If you want to play No Nonsense Trivia live in the coming weeks, you can do so by visiting twitch.tv/nononsensetrivia, where we will be streaming on Monday, April 6th at 7 p.m. Categories for our quizzes that evening will include skateboarding, retro video games, serial killers — that's cereal like breakfast cereal, by the way, serial killers — Native American myths, TV show titles, U.S. history, secondhand songs before they were famous, and more. We'll also be streaming on Thursday, April 9th, 2020 at 7 p.m. Categories for our quizzes that evening will include weird and dangerous animals, stage names, movie plot details, cartoon cats, memes, famous quotes and catchphrases, boxing celebrities, and more. Both of these streaming events start at 7 p.m. on those days, Monday and Thursday, respectively. Make sure you follow No Nonsense Trivia on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, and Twitch to stay updated on when we stream our quizzes and when we resume our live schedule. That's No Nonsense Trivia on your social networks. And you can play Nice Guys Pizza Trivia with Mark Davis on Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Just find the link on the Nice Guys Pizza Facebook page or in the show notes of this episode. Join us. Won't you?
And also, you can... will be posting this on the No Nonsense Facebook. The No Nonsense Podcast Facebook.
Yes.
Later on, after I make an event.
Nice Guys Pizza Trivia.
So, you can hop on there and you can talk to us and you can get information there. There's loads
Please
of information
do.
About the podcast in general, conversation about what's going on, et cetera, et cetera. So there you
go. It's your new Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday night thing.
Hey, baby. I've got an idea.
What's that?
Let's take a break.
Ooh.
And then let's come back and let's do some of these questions.
Let's do it. Back. Mark, are you ready for your first question?
I think so.
Okay, I have a vocabulary question for you.
Okay.
Billy Bean is best known for being a sabermetrician.
Beanie Babies.
No. Okay. A sabermetrician, which is someone who studies what? What does a sabermetrician study?
Okay, so I know who Billy Bean is. I can't remember if you asked a question about him. There was some question I saw recently somewhere about him. But I know him from Moneyball. And I can't remember if he was, there was Jonah Hill and there was Brad Pitt. And I think Brad Pitt is the one who played Billy Bean. He was a manager of the Oakland Athletics. And they were the first team to basically use not the amount of home runs. Basically, I think from what I understand, it's the only stat that really matters is how often they hit the ball. If you get enough people that can hit the ball and get people on base, you're good. So that is what sabermetrics is. I mean, metrics, I guess, is like, you know, the counting of or whatever, or the study of, but saber, I mean, I think of like saber-toothed tiger or like a saber, like a sword. And neither of those
tigers are hot right now, Mark.
They are. But I don't really know how either of those things could really come into play. So just knowing what I know from Moneyball, I guess I'm going to have to go with, the study of how many, I don't know the right way to put it, but, I don't know if I want to say study, but the study of how many times people hit the ball, like that statistic or those statistics.
Yes, Mark. Baseball statistics. Statistics. Okay. Yeah. Sabermetrician. Yes, you're right. Billy Bean is a player turned executive. Was profiled in 2011's Moneyball. Saber, if you're like me, you're wondering where does Saber come in? I was thinking maybe it was like the bat or something like that.
Right, like taking a bite out of the ball.
Right. Yeah. No, but it's actually it's derived from the initials of the Society for American Baseball Research, whose members analyze the sport.
Oh, okay.
So, but wow. Sabermetrics is what Billy Bean studies.
Huh. Okay. Well, I'm glad I got there.
Yeah.
I just got done talking shit about myself about not knowing movies, and then a movie got me out of that.
There you go. All right. Leave a little faith.
Seriously. Here's your first question. Uh-huh. Speaking of movies, computer space, the first commercially sold coin-operated video game, was featured in what 1973 sci-fi film?
Computer space.
Yes. It was played on a black and white television.
Okay. Well, let's see here. Early 70s science fiction. I'm thinking about Close Encounters of the Third Kind. I know that's definitely in the 70s, around that time. And I've never seen it, though, so I can't confirm.
You've never seen Close Encounters of the Third Kind?
Seen the famous clip of, like, the arrival at the end, you know? But I've never actually...
Oh,
it's Richard Dreyfuss, right?
Yes. Do yourself a favor. Take some time.
Mr. Holland.
Yes, exactly. His opus before his opus.
Right. Musical movie.
It is a great fucking movie.
I don't know if computer space is in it. I can't confirm because I haven't seen it. War Games has computer games in it, but that's an 80s movie. I'm certain of that, so it's not that.
Would you like to play a game?
Right. And I don't think that was computer space. I think it was it just called War Game?
I think so, probably.
I thought there was supposed to be more than one game here. War Games. This is titled War Game?
It's plural. What the hell's going on?
And then I don't know if you would call, like, this is going to sound kind of out there, but I don't know if you would call A Clockwork Orange a sci-fi movie. But I just remember there's, like, this colorful scene in that movie where Malcolm McDowell is walking through and there's, like, lots of colors everywhere. There could be, like, a video game cabinet in the background. Is this, like, that video game that has, like, that yellow cabinet? You know, there's like one old classic video game that has like a yellow sleek cabinet.
I think I know the scene you're talking about. It's like where he sees like the two girls, the two girls that he takes home.
Right.
And
right,
he has
right,
sex
right.
with, mm-hmm. and they're eating like the dick shaped lollipops or whatever.
Right.
They're
exactly.
going through records and stuff.
Yeah. Like it could be that, like in a background shot, but.
One of my favorite movies.
Again, you said sci-fi. I don't know if that's really...
I think technically it's sci-fi. I think I mentioned before in the podcast, I was lucky enough to take a science fiction class in high school. Mm-hmm. It was called American Literature, but...
those who were in the know knew it was a sci-fi class.
Those that were in the know knew it was a science fiction class. And you know, I think our teacher pretty much said any movie that's set in the future is kind of automatically science fiction. And I think I've looked it up before and it is even Waterworld is considered science fiction, even though it's in the future.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the thought behind that is just because when you're in the future, you're automatically thinking of, you know, science that may or may not exist to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
Or what the deal is, but yeah, I would say it's considered science fiction.
Yeah, I always took sci-fi to mean that there's like a there needs to be some kind of like emphasis on a technology that's either a solution to a problem or a cause of a problem or important to the setting in some way. That's an imagined science or an
like
imagined
Looper.
Technology. Yeah, I mean, yeah. What was it like? Dallas was hosting the trivia the other night on live stream, and he pulled up the stream of himself on another device, and it started looping.
Yes.
And I saw him exit out of it, and I thought, oh, he just closed his own loop.
Perfect.
But to answer your question, I think I'm just going to go with Close Encounters of the Third Kind. That's, I think, the most prominent sci-fi movie of the 70s that I can think of. And 73, sure. Maybe it seems on point.
Close Encounters was actually 1977.
Ooh,
yeah,
okay,
the correct answer is wrong, but the correct answer is Soylent Green.
Oh, there's Soylent another one Green. I haven't seen.
You haven't seen Soylent Green?
No, another hole in my movie.
Well, talk about one that's probably been spoiled for you.
Oh yeah, I think yeah. Animaniacs spoiled that or something. Some shit. Like I caught a reference before I even heard about the movie. You know,
oops.
Yep. Who doesn't know about Soylent Green?
Yeah, it is, and it is people.
And
if you didn't,
the
know.
Balls on the company to name their company Soylent.
Yeah,
you know
seriously.
What I mean. Just leaning right into it.
I know.
Free yeah. marketing, I guess. What's the mentality there?
I have no idea, man.
Here we are talking about it.
I was really, yeah. I mean, I guess that's it. I guess it's, you know, get the name on people's mouths. Everybody already knows, you know, the name.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows your name.
You got to wonder how many serious questions they got about, like, is it really made of people?
So, the cameras are off, doors closed, just you and me. Is this shit people or what's up?
Because we saw the movie.
Because, you know, overpopulation.
This guy over here didn't even see the movie.
Overpopulation is a problem. Got to do something with all these humans. And I mean, you know, all that breakdown of organic matter. I mean,
do they explain that in the movie like that?
You know what? It has been since high school since I've seen it. And I'm very old now. And I cannot remember. I don't remember movies as well and books as well as I wish I did. I probably need to re-see a lot of stuff.
I think our movie trivia scores can attest to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'll watch a movie and be like, that's good, and then just a dump of everything.
Well, here's another thing that you might have learned in high school and forgotten. It's a world history question, Mark.
I can guarantee I've forgotten it, yeah.
All right. Well, don't count yourself out yet. Here it is. What country was known as New Holland until the mid 19th century?
No clue. The only thing I know really about Holland is that it's called the Netherlands, and that I caught a lot of shit from a team because they guessed Holland when the answer was the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. I'm not even 100% sure where the Netherlands are. I know they're in Europe. So that's, I mean, to be honest with you, like,
well, let me adjust this question to how it was originally written.
I
misread it. What island country was known as New Holland until the mid 19th century?
What island country?
Yeah. And also give you as an extra hint, it's in the Southern Hemisphere.
The island country in the Southern Hemisphere?
Yep, it was known as New Holland until the mid 19th century.
The Southern Hemisphere. You know what's? I don't even know where the line is. I don't know what's Northern and Southern Hemisphere. I mean,
everything south of Ecuador is Southern Hemisphere, and everything north
okay,
of Ecuador.
Fair enough. Okay. Southern Hemisphere. I don't know if it's low. I mean, I would just have to guess something. What a weird Holland. New Holland?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because you mentioned Ecuador, I'm trying to think of, a place that's low and hot. That is an island. I don't know. I'm going to, Puerto Rico. I have no idea.
Oh, no, Mark. Not Puerto Rico. New Holland?
No idea. I have no clue.
No. The U.S. might have been involved with Puerto Rico by the mid 18th or 19th century, but the answer is actually Australia.
Oh.
Yes, it was renamed Australia or Terra Australis, which means the Great Southland, because it was believed at the time to be the southernmost continent at the time. Antarctica was still speculative. But interestingly, Mark, the namesake lives on in animal taxonomy, as many of Australia's native species have the specific name Novae Hollandae. For example, the emu, whose binomial is Dromaeus Novae Hollandae. So many of the animal species still carry this Latin name that relates to New Holland, even if they're from Australia. Yeah,
that's really interesting. I wonder if a lot of we have a good deal of Australian and New Zealand listeners. I wonder if they know that they were formerly New Holland.
Oh, I have to imagine that they do, right?
I guess so.
I
mean, yeah,
I don't know. We would all hope that we know a lot more about our nation's history than we do, as the show's evidence.
Well, do you know old New York was once New Amsterdam?
Thanks to They Might Be Giants.
Yeah. If it wasn't for them, I don't know. Here is your here's your second question. Catch It, Bin It, Kill It is a public health campaign in Britain that has been revived to help stop the spread of coronavirus. What disease was it originally intended to stop the spread of in 2007? I love your thoughtful.
Okay. Let me consider that. So we have, you said it was in 2007?
Yes.
So there was a couple pandemic outbreaks around that time, if I remember correctly. One of which was SARS. And one of which was swine flu. And if I remember correctly, I don't think SARS ever reached Europe. You said this was the UK, right? The National Health Service?
Yes.
Right. And if it did, it was probably small numbers, but I think swine flu was more of a threat around that time. So I'm going to go swine flu as my answer.
Okay. Swine flu actually, or the swine influenza, if you will, was in 2009. 2007, the NAS put out Catch It, Bin It, Kill It for the flu. Just the regular flu.
Okay. Good. Good on them.
Yeah.
Trying to get ahead of the game there.
Exactly. You know? Yeah.
Let's not mess around with even regular flu. I like it.
Yeah. They, it's pretty interesting. They, you know, the whole idea is catch the sneeze, inside either your elbow or inside of a, tissue, throw it in the waste bin. Mm-hmm. And then kill it by washing your hands. They in 2007, they came out with it following evidence that good respiratory and hand hygiene might reduce the spread of flu. They did bring it back in 2009 for swine flu. Tell me if this sounds familiar at all. One of the researchers stated that, quote, until a vaccine is ready, the main tool we have to combat pandemic flu is people's behavior. For example, good respiratory and hand hygiene, as summed up in the NHS's Catch It, Bin It, Kill It campaign, can slow the spread of the pandemic. Wise words.
Yeah, it does sound familiar.
Yes. So
we're still learning today.
Yeah. Well, some of us are still learning. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
Still learning this lesson today.
Yeah.
As a society, I mean.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Mark, speaking of viruses, you've watched Tiger King, right?
I have.
The human virus, Joe Exotic. I'll just say it. I'm not a fan, to be honest.
Right.
I watched it, and I was not proud of myself after watching it. That's how I'd describe it. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. I've been surprised by how many people have been like pro him. I feel like I saw one of those memes that were like, if you think that these people are the heroes, you miss the point.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been one of those memes that you know, people have been adding more and more.
Got the Joker and Rick Sanchez from Rick and Morty.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know what's funny though is those are fictional characters. Walter White from Breaking Bad. Those are fictional characters that are written to prove the point. Joe Exotic is a real human being.
He is.
and this Netflix series has like promoted him to this like role model status, you know,
yeah,
by way of its sensational presentation.
Well, I think, basically, you know, they're promoting him because it's getting downloads.
Well, yeah, it's totally.
Yeah, they're a money. Absurd. You know, they're a company trying to make money, and they know how to profit off of someone who's fucking insane. And I think, you know, there's one way of watching this stuff and being like, this guy's a piece of shit, but this is a fascinating story. There's another way of looking at him being like, this guy is like awesome. You know what I mean?
Right.
And like, I very much watched it and I was very glued to the TV in that the turning point for me, I mean, like, I automatically was like, it's crazy. This guy's got all these, you know, tigers. And he was like saying, if people come and try and take him, it's going to be like a small Waco. I was like, Jesus Christ.
Right.
But the period where he took out a gun and shot a mannequin in like the head because of Carol Baskin, I was like,
an effigy.
Yeah. I was like, okay, this is insane. This guy belongs in fucking jail.
I had the same feeling. That moment, I was like, whoa.
And anybody who sees that and is like still on his side, the problem isn't Netflix. The problem is the person. You know what I mean? Like, holy shit. To like see that and still be like, Team Joe, you know, it's just like, what the fuck's wrong with you? It's insane.
Yeah.
Absolutely insane.
But it has kind of brought the topic of exotic cats to the surface. So I do have a question for you, Mark, about exotic cats. The hybrid offspring of a tiger and a lioness is called what? What would you call the hybrid offspring of a tiger and a lioness?
Well, you know, my gut reaction is to say a liger, but I think they even have ligers in the movie. Or a liger or two. And you wouldn't let anything by that easy, I don't think. Oh, you see saw those eyebrows do a little. You know, you could be related to that guy from Schitt's Creek.
Eugene Levy.
Mm.
Yeah, I could. Mm-hmm. I'm not, but I could.
Hey, you never know, man. Do a 23andMe. So a liger is a lion and tiger. So the opposite of that would be a tiger and a lion. A tigan?
Yes, Mark. A tigan. That's right.
I wasn't even answering, but okay.
I mean, I don't know. I just thought it was incredible that you stumbled upon that.
Well, I mean, that's probably what I would have gone with because I thought liger was a little bit too much of a give me, and I don't know. I don't know what else I would say, but a tigan.
Yeah, it's a bit of a, like, you know, misdirection question. Like, I think if you are casually listening, you'll answer liger, you know, but if you really break it down, you
I'm
know,
sure
like
a
tiger
lot of people
and lioness.
Do.
Yeah. But yeah, a liger is what you would call the offspring of a lion and a tigress. And they do have that in the Tiger King and Netflix series, while a tigon is the term for the offspring of a tiger and a lioness. It doesn't occur frequently in the wild. There is a little overlap, though. It's occurred occasionally in parts of India and northern Turkey. Zoo policy is typically to not let this occur, but it does happen occasionally and sometimes purposefully in the case of Joe Exotic. Either way, there's an estimated less than 100 ligers in the world and probably even less than tigons. But Mark, do you think that Joe Exotic has ever bred a liger and a tigon and made some fucked up... Liger tigon.
It's like a turducken.
Right?
Yeah, probably. I mean, he seems like the kind of guy that would, yeah.
He would have done it.
It's probably already done.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, a couple times over. And then he gets those two babies to have sex.
And that's how you get the island of Dr. Moreau. You mix that with a human, and then you got Dr. Moreau.
The Isle of Dr. Moreau episode of South Park is an all-time great.
I got to go back and read it. That's early, too. That's
yes.
Like season one, right?
That's when I watched it. It's been a long time. Here is your last question of the first round. According to a 2019 article released by ThePudding.com, what hip-hop artist had the largest vocabulary with 7,879 unique words used?
Okay. I think I might have seen this chart, and I'm also a fan. So it's got to be my dude Aesop Rock, right?
That's your answer?
Yep.
That is correct. It is Aesop Rock.
Yep. I didn't even have to hesitate on that one.
Yeah, Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm pretty sure I saw that chart, and I think all of Wu-Tang together was rated as the number two. Like, if you put them all together, they were two. But anyways.
So the one I saw, the initial one I saw was from 2014 or 15, and he was number one, and there was no one close to being second. Okay. The second chart I found, I tried to find an updated one to 2019, and he was still at the forefront. The second place was Bus Driver, who was pretty close. I think he is at like 7,000 unique words. Mm-hmm. So catching up a little bit, but yeah, Aesop Rock is still far out in front.
Yeah, I love Bus Driver. Aesop Rock, I think, has new music coming out this week. Like, he did a song for a video game. I saw a little ad with a video clip and a sample. And I like how, like, you know, he's been doing this for over 20 years now, or about 20 years, and he stays true to his style, but his flow, like, he's not afraid to, like, change up his flow and try out some new stuff, too, and I really appreciate that. It's almost like Radiohead, like, you know, they like adjust their sound, but they stay true to themselves throughout.
Yeah, he will. He'll hang his boots to rest when he's impressed. So he triple knotted, knot 'em and forgot 'em.
Daylight.
Yes, one of my
great track.
One of my favorites. Yes, absolutely. Is that it?
That would be it.
All right, let's take a little breaky break, a little resty rest, and then come back for. I think we've got a miscorrection.
Yeah, we have one from you, right? A self-miscorrection? Yes.
Yep. A self-miscorrection. The ultimate shame.
You got to do it, though.
I do. And all then right. We'll do the second round.
Back, Mark. It's time for a miscorrection.
Got him.
Oh no!
All right, here we go. It's time for a miscorrection. Miscorrection.
I'll tell you. I got the right melody. It was
what
still
we have now is a missed connection. We've now jumped the shark. We've gone from misconnection to miscorrection to misconnection. I miss being in the same room as you so bad.
Yep.
So last week we were talking about Street Fighter. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to suss with myself about the fighters, the new fighters in the newer class with Cammy and DJ, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned in passing that one of the classes beforehand had a fighter named Baraka, but I was very sorely mistaken. Baraka is from the video game series Mortal Kombat. I don't know how bad that's going to sound, but probably very. The guy's name that I was looking for is Blanca. Blanca, mm-hmm. who I think was from Louisiana or something.
No.
Fighting.
Nope. Blanca is from Brazil.
Oh, you're okay. Yes,
not Louisiana. He does have that the like dockside. It looks kind of like a bayou, I guess. But Brazil, it's a world warrior.
Yes.
So Guile is from the United States. Ken is from the United States, but Blanca is from Brazil.
Damn. Okay. Yeah, I fucked up.
Yep. And another thing is they both have like big teeth.
Yes. You know? Yes.
They so that's another confusing thing cuz Baraka is like a cannibal from the Outworlds, if I remember correctly.
Blanca is not a cannibal?
He's like a genetic experiment, I think, by M. Bison, like, or a government experiment.
Oh shit.
But I don't think I think he might have been like some kind of like a guerrilla fighter or something like that. I'm not exactly sure Blanca's origin. But Baraka is like from a race of cannibals. And he's kind of used as like a, like, oh man, can you believe that Shao Kahn would work with those cannibals type thing in the Mortal Kombat lore.
God.
And yes, there is Mortal Kombat lore. For those unaware. Anyway.
For those
big ups to you for catching that. I heard you say it and I made a mental note, but I never circled back around. So it's good that we have our miscorrection segment here to clear things up.
Yeah. I as soon as I was listening back, cause I listened back to all the episodes. I'm sure you editing them and going through them and everything. That's your listening. You're listening back. And as soon as I heard myself say Barack, I was like, oh, what have I done? Oh, what did I do?
Well, you are forgiven, Mark.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate it.
If you'd like to write us, with a miscorrection, a rate my question, or even just a little no note, you can write to us at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com. Call us at 1-929-356-6966. That's 1-929-356-6966. or find us on social media. And we also want to take some time to thank Mo for his 5-star review. Mo calls us Trivial Magnificence, saying this podcast lights up his synapses like a shot of adrenaline to his brainstem. He continues, jeez. Mark and Lee's chemistry is charming and guides you through a wonderland of trivial knowledge. It's perfect for commutes, long work days, road trips, or just to beef up that gray matter. I recommend to all.
Everybody needs a friend like Mo.
That is a great review. He's thank
like,
you so much,
he's
Mo.
Such a wingman.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Jeez, I'm crow.
It's thank wonderful. You.
Yeah.
Thanks also to 90s, Nika123466, Angry Bison, and all others for their reviews. And please take a second to rate us on your podcast service if you haven't. If you've already done so or can't because there's no review section, shares are always appreciated.
Yes. Please and thank you. Are you ready for your first question of the second round?
Hit me with it.
An earthquake that measures 8 on the Richter scale would be how many times stronger than an earthquake that measures 4 on the same scale?
Okay. The difference between 4 and 8?
Yes. How many times stronger?
Okay. Let's say it's, I don't know anything about the Richter scale, but maybe it's like it doubles in each of its, like it's an exponentially doubling type thing. So you, if you have 4, you're starting at 4. So then you would have 2 times, let's see here. 2 times 2 would be 4 for 5. Wait, you'd have to start at 2. Shit. You'd have to
you're in double the weeds.
It. You'd have to double it from 1 to 2. But I don't, what'd you say? How strong is it? How many more times strong is it?
Yeah, from 4 to 8. How many times stronger?
All right. 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64. 128 to 256. It's probably just like computers, man.
How many megs of RAM does a?
I'm gonna say 256 megabytes stronger.
Okay, the correct answer is actually 10,000 times stronger.
Whoa!
Yes,
4 to 8.
From 4 to 8, and a 8 magnitude. On the Richter scale, is 10,000 times stronger than a 4.
Jeez.
Yes. Each number, whole number from 1 to 1, is 10 times stronger. It's a logarithmic scale.
Who is this Richter asshole? They need to adjust the scale. There needs to be, like, level 1 and then, like, level 10,000.
His name is Charles Richter.
Uh-huh.
And it was presented in his landmark 1935 paper where he just called it the magnitude scale.
Okay.
So, yeah.
It just seems like such a big jump.
Well, I mean,
you're
you know.
Oh, it's 4 one day, 8 the next. What's the difference?
Well, you know, these.
4 to 8. No. Huge difference.
Big
catastrophic
difference. Big difference.
Yeah.
But, yeah, 10,000.
All right, Mark, I have a psychology and literature question to kick off my questions for round 2.
All right, I think I'm ready.
Lilliputian hallucinations, where objects appear smaller than normal, derive their name from which 1726 novel by Jonathan Swift? Lilliputian hallucinations. This was kind of inspired by a question that you asked this week.
I know what question you're talking about, I believe.
Yeah, it was about what is it called? Desmotopia?
Ooh. You're putting me in a jam.
Uh-oh.
Yeah,
I think it's Desmotopia, where objects seem different in size.
They seem either bigger, smaller, or farther away or closer. Mm-hmm. And it can affect other senses as well. I know by its other name, which is Alice in Wonderland syndrome?
Right.
Okay.
Alice in Wonderland Syndrome.
Yes. This one I know.
Because, okay, I was wondering how deep you went on your research for that question.
It's actually not from my research. It's actually from a couple of other questions I've asked in the past. It is the Jonathan Swift novel, Gulliver's Travels.
That's right, Mark.
Because he's big and the Lilliputians are so small.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. There was a couple questions I had asked about it. One question was about another group of people that live in that world named Yahoos. That had something to do with the question I asked had something to do with it being connected to Yahoo.com and some other stuff. So
that was like the first appearance of that word.
I think so. Yeah, I think that's like where the word, like, and something about how the word started being used to mean like unsavory people or like rude people.
Ah, rude people. Interesting. You Yahoo.
Yeah, what a Yahoo. And now it's just like crazy, I guess.
I want to bring back the negative connotation now. You know, it feels like the search engine had its turn at the word. Now it's fallen from grace. So I'm going to take it back and use it back in our everyday nomenclature.
Reclaim it.
Get out of my way, you Yahoo. Yeah, the Lilliputians. There's actually an Isle of Lilliput. And apparently Jonathan Swift was sitting on a bench one day and noticed somebody walking across the lake or walking across the other side of the lake. And they were very tiny. And that's where he kind of was inspired for the idea of like a race of tiny people to serve as the analog for his satire of war between Britain and France.
Huh.
Dysmestropsia.
Okay.
Dysmestropsia is Alice in Wonderland.
Syndrome. Yeah, okay. I remember bouncing back between dysmestropsia and dysmestropsia. I couldn't remember.
It might be one or the other.
Hey, who the hell knows?
I guess you experience Lilliputian hallucinations when you might have Alice in Wonderland syndrome.
Yeah, it seems like it falls on one side. If you've got both, then you've got Alice in Wonderland syndrome. If you've got just one, then you've got and then maybe if everything is too big, you've got what is it? What is this one? Huh? Everything is too... The question you asked is...
Everything appears smaller.
So, yeah, that's... So, yeah, Gulliver's Travels... Gulliver was the big one. I don't know.
Yeah, so the Lilliputians were the tiny ones.
So the other one is Gulliver syndrome, if everything is too big.
Well, at least the hallucinations are. I don't know if it's a whole syndrome. That's what I'm saying. Like, if you have Alice in Wonderland syndrome, you might have Lilliputian hallucinations. And heaven forbid you walk into the classic literature section of a library during that time. You'll be all confused.
You hear people talking about things being too big and too small, and you're just like, what the fuck? In my fucking brain. All right. Are you ready for your next question?
Oh, yeah.
I want you to say, oh, yes, sir.
Keep dreaming, Buster.
Got in my head. Selling more than 200,000 copies in its first day of publication, more than any other nonfiction title, I believe, definitely at the time, and I believe still to this day, but I'm not sure. I tried to find information about it and I wasn't able to. Living History is the memoir of whom? There it is. There's the
Living History. All right. Well, who lived history? Could be somebody like, I don't know, Winston Churchill or Mother Teresa, but neither of them seem like people that would like indulge in a book and title it that. Maybe it's somebody more modern who made history. Barack Obama. Yeah, I mean, that's Barack Obama. He wrote The Audacity of Hope, and I'm pretty sure he wrote another book. That would make sense. And like to that's a very political title too. So I can't really think of another politician that might write that. Maybe it's like I don't think Harvey Milk wrote any books. I'll go with Barack Obama.
The correct answer is Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton.
When did she write that? I hope it's not 2016.
No, it's 2003, I believe.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. If that book came out in like August of 2015, that would not be.
Yeah,
wouldn't be prudent.
And I, not at this juncture. Oh my God, I loved. I was such a big Dana Carvey fan. I mean, I still am, but she was senator at the time. She was senator from 2001 to 2009. So I guess it was, you know, after the White House, right? Gotcha. I think she wrote about the Monica Lewinsky thing in there. That's probably a large part of like what got a lot of press in there, like how she was dealing with all that. And
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I have a museum objects question for you, Mark. Museum objects.
Artifacts.
Yes, you'd call them artifacts. That's a good word for it. Artifacts question I have for you, Mark.
Okay.
Which influential scientist's middle finger sits inside of a glass egg in the Florence History of Sciences Museum?
This person just really hate eggs. When I die, put my middle finger in a fucking egg.
You want to talk about some 2001 shit?
I'm allergic. Yeah. Italian scientist. You know what's fucked up about my brain? When I think of
scientists. You think about Chef Boyardee?
When I think of scientists, it's hard for me to like discern like mathematicians and stuff. Like there are people that I know are scientists that I don't think of as scientists. Does that make any sense? When I think of scientists, I strictly think of like people in a lab making like doing stuff with the periodic table. But I know that's not the case, and I'm trying to think of famous Italian scientists, and I don't know many. I feel very in the weeds. I feel wish I had someone to suss with.
Influential scientists.
Italian.
The Florence History of Science Museum is where the Florence. Middle finger in the glass egg resides.
Sorry. Yeah, no, that's amazing. I don't know. I'm just going to go with Galileo. I have no idea.
Yes, that's right, Mark.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Yes, Galileo. Well, listen, known as the father of observational astronomy, the father of modern physics, the father of the scientific method, and the father of modern science. This man, four fathers.
He's the forefather of the forefathers.
That's some big dad science energy there.
Seriously, that's yeah. He's Papa Father.
So why the middle finger? It's probably his last fuck you to the Catholic Church.
Yeah, he as aforementioned, he hates eggs. I want to know about the glass egg. I don't know if he was just allergic to eggs or
it's got like a gold ornate like thing around the top of the shell too. But it's like crystal clear glass. They also have two other fingers and a tooth in the collection, which went missing, but were later recovered at an auction.
Oh, okay. So they got stolen.
Yeah, like 100 years earlier, and then they showed
missing,
up.
I was like, where did Brad put that tooth? Like, I don't know.
It was like, I inherited these from my great grandfather.
That is, that's insane.
Yeah.
Just like we were talking about the Van Gogh painting getting stolen. Mm-hmm. How fucking ballsy to just take fucking Galileo's tooth and just be like, peace out. and take off. Are you ready for your last question of the second round?
Indeed.
What species of shark is known as the garbage eater due to a variety of inedible man-made objects that often linger in its stomach and is second only to the great white in recorded fatal attacks on humans?
Okay. Let's see here. So what sharks do I know? There's the hammerhead shark, which I think is endemic to Australia, I think, if I remember correctly. And they just seem like they look mean. They just look mean. And then you have the whale shark, which I can't remember that it's like it's not one of those things. It's either not a shark or not a whale. And I can't remember which is which. And then there's the mako shark, which I think are just like small. So maybe they want to like grow up to be the big great white shark. And they're trying to like emulate that and attack. So maybe it's the mako. I know shark attacks actually don't occur that frequently, so I don't want to paint this as like, you know, don't go in the water thing. Because as Tim mentioned, I think, in a Rate My Question, more humans in New York City bite other people than there are sharks that attack people. But sharks just look mean as shit. That's all I'm saying. They just look mean.
More humans than humans. More humans bite humans.
Did I say more humans than humans?
No, you said more humans bite other humans or something like
that. Oh, yeah. Okay. All right.
So it made me think of more humans bite humans.
It's times like these that we wish Weird Al was a personal friend, I think.
Tell me. Well, he doesn't take, he won't take any kind of requests or any ideas.
That's smart.
For, you know, because he could get sued. You know, people could be like, oh, well, I gave him that idea. Give me money. So.
Right. Not even from his friends, though. His personal friends.
Not even from, I think people have pitched ideas about their own songs. I think Madonna has pitched him ideas about her songs, and he's like, I can't, you know.
Mm-hmm. Like if you mention it to him, you destroy it, basically.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. I'll go with the mako shark.
That is incorrect. The correct answer is the tiger shark.
How could I not, with all this tiger stuff going on?
I know. Tell me about it. That is not what got this answer here. An apex predator with a range of prey that includes crustaceans, fish, seals, birds, squid, turtles, sea snakes, dolphins, and either of other smaller sharks. I believe I actually read one of the things that got me to reading about them is that I believe they eat all of the other babies inside the mother before they're born.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah. They're known as like basically.
I thought Baraka was bad.
Right. They're known as basically, like I said, like a human garbage, like not human, but a garbage disposal. They will eat anything. They have been found with
a biological garbage disposal.
Right, yeah, they have been found with inedible objects. It says, this is from the Wikipedia page, because of its aggressive and indiscriminate feeding style, it often mistakenly eats inedible objects such as automobile license plates, oil cans, tires, and baseballs. Notably terrestrial mammals, including horses, goats, sheep, dogs, cats, and brown rats are fairly common in the stomach contents of tiger sharks around the coasts of Hawaii. And in one case, remains of two flying foxes were found in the stomach of a shark.
That is horrifying.
Yeah, these things do not fuck around. I mean, they are very indiscriminate.
I hope they don't grow bodies like the street sharks. That would be bad.
That would be very bad. They would just go around eating your car, I guess, and fucking whatever.
Hey, Mark, at this point, I'll believe anything is about to happen. Seriously, all bets are off at this point, I think, with reality. Anyways, how about your third question? You want it?
I do. I would love it.
Last week, I asked you a question about two bands that you're not too hot on, the Spin Doctors and Blues Traveler. But I got one for you here. Yes. That I think you're going to enjoy a little bit more. This is a question about the Beatles.
I love the Beatles.
Good. All right. We're going to test your fandom now.
Oh, no. I don't like that.
We're going to put all the Beatles against each other. The year, Mark, is 1981.
Mm.
In that year.
It's not a Beatles year.
Oh, but is it? In 1981, which member of the Beatles... You're right. It's not a Beatles year. Which member of the Beatles... had the highest performing single on the Billboard Hot 100? 1981.
Mm.
Who had the biggest hit?
Well, are you being a sneaky Lee? There go those eyebrows. Well, you know, the obvious answer, I mean, the obvious answer would either be John or Paul. I mean, it's tricky enough just doing 50-50 between the two of them. George is a dark horse. Ringo is a darker horse. George has a very good solo career. I'm wondering, I don't know, you like, I'm wondering if it's not Ringo. Ringo has a song called It Don't Come Easy that I know is pretty popular. 81 sounds like it might have been the year. It's like just cheesy enough that it could have been the year. And who would fucking think Ringo, you know? And boy, wouldn't you love it. Wouldn't you love if it was fucking Ringo? It could be any of them, you know? I feel like it could be any of them.
All right. I'm going to give you the song. It seems like you could use a little bit of a hint.
Okay.
The song is All Those Years Ago.
That does nothing for me. I was hoping that would help out. But that kind of like re-pushes the Ringo thing for me because I feel like I would know a John, Paul, or George song called All Those Years Ago. So I'm just going to stick with my man Ringo. I'm going to say Ringo.
No, 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 no. It's not Ringo. As funny as that would be, Ringo only had he peaked at number 38. He did have a top 40 hit in 1981 with Rack My Brain. And it was not John Lennon, who peaked at number 2 for 3 weeks with Woman. He entered the chart with that track at 36. George was the one responsible for All Those Years Ago, which also peaked at number 2 for 3 weeks, but entered the charts at 33, three spots higher than 36, thereby making it the more successful solo Beatles track for that year.
Huh. Now,
Paul McCartney did release Tug of War in that year, his 11th solo album, but did not have a single released off of it until 1982, which would be Ebony and Ivory. So that was number one. So the idea there being that, you know, you would think that maybe Woman or Ebony and Ivory would be, you know, the highest performing charts. A lot of people forget about George.
Yeah, they forgot about George.
Motherfuckers act like they forgot about George Harrison.
George is my what are your top four favorite Beatles solo careers ranked from top to bottom?
Well, now I would probably have to say that it's I don't know. You know, I think the Beatles are one of those things where when you're talking about their solo stuff, you have different moods, you know?
Right.
But I would have to say generally it's probably Paul, then George. Those two will flip though. Then John, and then Ringo. You know, Ringo sadly deserves all the shit that he gets, I think. But I understand that he's important to the band. I understand, you know, his value in the Beatles, and that's great and all. But yeah, I don't know. His stuff is just so goofy sometimes.
Yeah. I mean,
like, who let Raffi in this band?
Don't Come Easy is good. It's kind of like, why weren't you writing this when you were in the Beatles? Mm-hmm. You know, but
well, I need to check that out. I don't know that one, actually.
It's good. I mean, you know, it's nothing great, but there's some horns in it and stuff. I mean, if you, when you hear it, you'll be like, you can picture it as a Beatles song and be like, this would be like a good Beatles track.
Right.
But, you know, it is what it is. Are you ready?
Yep.
Let's take a little breather and let's get ourselves all juiced up for a couple of Rate My Questions. How many do we have?
I would even say a few. I think we have three ready to go here.
Three bad boys.
Yep.
And then and then final questions. Mm-hmm. We'll see you on the other side.
All right, Mark, we're back, and it's time for a rate my, well, three rate my questions.
It's just a nightmare. You know,
we gotta figure out a new thing. The singing thing works in when we're in the same room.
Yeah. Every time it just falls apart magnificently. All right.
Well, our first one is from our friend Eric, a.k.a. Fro. Read my question from Eric. Uh-huh. He says,
this is the one he wrote in the group.
Right. Yeah. So did you look at the answer to this one?
I did not. I was a good boy.
Okay.
Please, though, Eric.
We can suss together.
Please do not write these in the group. It was so hard all week. I imagine that it's hard for you to not look these up, getting them in your email.
Yeah.
But just having them, I was hoping that no one else would look up the answer and put it anywhere, blah, 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 blah. Luckily, no one did, but
We want to keep it fresh.
Yes.
We don't want to open it until it's ready to be devoured.
Please and thank you.
Eric writes, able to run over 35 miles per hour or 56 kilometers per hour and needing to drink water only once every 2 to 4 days. The aptly named Camelopardalis is more commonly known as what? Now, did you have any ideas?
I had a dumb one.
Okay.
Camel.
What is it? Yep. Mm-hmm. Me too. I had that idea.
I mean, you know, I don't think that he would, you know, it's either one of those things where I don't know why he's putting aptly named. If he's putting it because camel is in the fucking name and it's like, you know, no,
yeah, that to me seems like it's a hint that it's not camel. You know what I mean?
I would hope that you're right.
Named?
Yeah.
Yeah. Otherwise, this would be a terrible question.
Right.
Yeah. Terribly worded anyway. So if it's not a camel, it only needs to drink water once every 2 to 4 days. It's able to run over 35 miles per hour. So it's kind of fast.
Are we thinking it doesn't? It only needs to drink water such a small amount because there's not a lot of water around.
Yeah, I would think so. I was thinking like a desert creature.
Like something in Africa, maybe.
Yeah. You know, I was just going to say cheetah. It's definitely not a cheetah because they can run faster than 35 miles an hour. So it's going to be slower than a cheetah. Maybe it's like a lizard. Like a horny lizard, or maybe I was thinking like a roadrunner.
Ooh.
You know?
Roadrunner is tasty.
Pardalis sounds kind of like ped, like feet, you know? I don't know if that's...
What was the name again?
Camelo Pardalis.
Is that all one word?
Yes. Camelopardalis.
I mean, if it was a bird, would it not have some part of the word that...
like aviary or something?
Right.
I mean, unfortunately, I just don't know that much about... like, this is... it's got to be maybe, like, part of, like, you know how I was talking about binomials earlier? Like, maybe that part is obscured. Like, this is only, like, part of it.
Because it would make it too obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
So this could be, like, half of the name?
So if it was, like, Carmeldopius, fucking New Hollandus,
right.
We'd be like, exactly. Oh, well, it's an Australian thing. Mm-hmm. I mean... there are a lot of animals that run fast. Which one is it, you know, that don't drink a lot of water? I mean, who knows what the fucking water habits. I would say Roadrunner is as good a guess as any.
Okay.
You want to go with that?
Yeah, let's do it. I'll open the answer here.
Okay. Roadrunner, Roadrunner. You know that song?
The Modern Lovers.
Yes, Jonathan Richman. I hate that song. I don't hate it.
Oh yeah, but it's kind of basic in terms of its structure.
Yeah, it's catchy, but it's really repetitive. Holy shit, mm-hmm. We get it.
It's kind of, I think it was inspired by krautrock, which is known for kind of its just having a driving wave rhythm that doesn't really change too much.
Right.
Or that's what. You know, some reviewer at Vox said when I was watching a video of theirs. I can't get this link to open. I'm just going to type it in. Camelo Pardalis. Ah, here it is. The giraffe, aka the camel leopard.
Oh, the fucking Camelo giraffe. Pardalis.
Mm-hmm.
God damn, that motherfucker only needs water every 2 or 3 days?
I guess so.
Long-ass neck.
Hey, the Camelo Pardalis is a large but faint constellation representing a giraffe. Interesting. All right, I like that question.
Me too. That's good. That's great. Yeah. I'd give it an A.
Oh, yeah. Strong rating for me as well. All right, we got one here from Dylan, Quiz Daddy Dylan.
Ah, Dylan Dylan
says, "Hey boys, I was saving this one, a personal favorite, but I figure now is a good time as ever to send in some extra questions."
Hey, here's boys. One.
What single, co-written by Lemmy Kilmister and Zakk Wylde, is Ozzy Osbourne's only solo top 40 single on the Billboard Hot 100 chart, peaking at number 28 in 1992? 1992.
92 Ozzy. So his two songs. Single. Two songs come to mind.
Mm-hmm.
No More Tears.
Mm-hmm.
And Mama, I'm Coming Home.
Yeah.
Did you think of either of those?
I thought of both of those.
Okay.
Yeah. They both sound like they could have Zakk Wylde on them. But I feel like Mama, I'm Coming Home is like more palatable and would be a bigger hit, like mainstream hit, than No More Tears. So that's where I'm leaning.
I just I have trouble picturing Lemmy being involved in Mama, I'm Coming Home. It's such a softy song.
Yeah, but maybe that's why. Maybe it's like, oh, I can't use this, you know, for... I can't talk about Mama and Motorhead. I gotta give it to Ozzy. He's got to talk about Mama. Because I can't. I gotta shake my blood. Can't talk about Mama coming home. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's very convincing. Yeah, I think that convinced me.
You know what I mean, though? Like it's like I said, it seems like it's like more of a palatable hit, And Lemmy could totally write that. And I think there's even a solo in it, too. Zakk Wylde would be all over that shit.
Yeah, I think I could almost sing the solo note for note. Okay. I won't.
All right. So are we going with it?
Yeah, let's go with it. Let's go with it. No More Tears, I don't think, was as big of a hit. No. Mom, I'm Coming Home was a lot more. I'm just kind of talking while you're looking. Mom, I'm Coming Home was a lot more, you know, palatable and easy to like play around different places, and more people could listen to it, I think. He also had, I don't know if it was in the same era, I think it was a little bit earlier, he had a duet with Lita Ford.
Oh, yeah.
Called If I Close My Eyes Forever. That was,
I vaguely remember that. A lot
as a kid.
And didn't he have like another music video where it was like him in like this like blue and orange lit room, and there was like little people in black leotards. He was like holding them.
Are you sure that wasn't like a fucking weird dream you had?
No, this I swear I saw this thing on MTV2.
Are you being horny on Maine right now?
Maybe. It is Mama, I'm Coming Home, Mark.
You're right. Nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Off of the 1991 album No More Tears.
Ah, yes. And I remember the tour for that album, if I remember correctly, was called No More Tours.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So if that gives you any fucking idea, now that he just recently said, you know, since he's been diagnosed with Parkinson's, that he's not going to be touring anymore for real, I think. He was saying that in 1992. I think he was saying No More Tours. So.
Yeah, it says here, Sharon Osbourne has previously claimed that the song was written by Ozzy in tribute to her. However, the song was actually co-written by Lemmy Kilmister, Zakk Wylde, Osbourne's longtime guitarist, and producer-engineer Tom Fletcher. Lemmy was brought in as a songwriter for No More Tears, providing lyrics for the tracks Mom, I'm Coming Home, Hellraiser, Desire, and I Don't Want to Change the World. To me, he's providing lyrics, not like music. That's
right.
I think, like, you know, what do I do with these songs?
Well, you know, on a second blush, knowing that he's involved, Mama seems like a very Lemmy word. You know, yep. I'd be curious to know if he was responsible for that.
Oh, man. I hope there's a video out there somewhere of him playing that. That would be great.
I could picture Ozzy being like, oh, Mummy, I'm coming home. And Lemmy being like, no, it got to be Mama. You know, like one of those hats that holds two beers, but he's got two bottles of whiskey. Oh, no, piss off. It's going to be Mama.
That's hilarious. Great question. I like that one.
Yes.
I think it's I don't know. I think it's a little difficult probably for mainstream. It's easier for us, I think, because we listen to metal, you know.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, they're looking for the most popular Ozzy song from that time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so I don't know. It's one
I
of those.
I guarantee many of my teams would write down Crazy Train. You know,
yeah, I'd be curious. You know what? I wish we could.
We
hold
can't
this
test
off.
It out.
I know.
We're locked in.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah.
It's just
write
like,
us. Let us know if you thought Crazy Train.
Or if you thought something other, you know, if your first answer at least included Mama, I'm Coming Home, and be honest and don't lie. Don't be a liar and say the truth.
And our last Rate My Question comes from Paul. And Paul, I just want to first apologize for not reading this sooner. We got this on in early January. Or late January, rather.
January.
It's early April now. And also, I cannibalized this for my Twitch trivia this week. So not only did I not read it, but I've used it. So needless to say, I love this question.
He rates this high.
Yeah. Here it is. Paul writes, I have an original U.S. president question. I think he means vice president, though. That I think you guys may like. The first part of the question is incredibly difficult, but the second piece of information should make it much more doable. Question, what former U.S. vice president served under both Thomas Jefferson and James Madison before dying in office? He's the only person to have ever been a VP under two different presidents.
So since you asked this, you already know the answer.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea. The only vice president to be... I remember you asking a vice president question.
Mm-hmm. Do you want the second part, the hint?
Sure.
That he was talking about that makes it much easier? Well, he writes, the question can stop here if you want to leave it as a very difficult question or look at the hint below. The hint is he shares an identical first and last name with a member of Parliament Funkadelic.
Oh, Bootsy Collins. it's gonna be because you asked George Clinton.
Yes, I did ask it. George Clinton.
See, I like what you did. I think I think what you did was the right thing. I think
I just shortened this question. Basically, which former vice president shares a name with a funk band leader?
Yeah, I mean, I like the information he gave. I like that.
Me too.
I like that he said. I like that he includes the only vice president to be under two vice president under two different presidents.
I think that's great trivia.
But
that in and of itself is a good question. It's hard, but it's good.
It is. But I like. I think if he combined that with instead of saying the Parliament thing, but saying how you put it. Which would be the question would be something along those, which is the only vice president to serve as vice president, or the only person to serve as vice president under two different presidents, shares the name with a famous funk singer or musician from the 70s, you know, to the 80s, where you're not being as specific about Parliament because everyone who knows anything about Parliament Funkadelic knows it's George Clinton.
Unless you oversus and say Bootsy Collins.
Yes. Or somebody else, you know, I don't know if Bernie Worrell, I think Bernie Worrell was in Parliament and maybe some other people, but yeah, I mean, you know, that way you're not being super, super obvious. You're still giving that good information and you can still get there from another way, you know, kind of meet from all corners.
Totally agree. Three great questions
yes,
this week.
Yes, fantastic.
Questions.
Thank you.
If you have any, you can write us at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com. Please don't put them in the Facebook group, but do join us there and participate. And you can also call us with the Rate My Question if you want. 1-929-356-6966. We're still waiting for that first call. We're going to put you on the show if you call in.
Yes.
So do
we'll
it.
Do it.
We want to hear your voices.
Indeed we do.
All right.
Are you ready?
Let's round it out here.
I think you're the first one.
Yes. I have a cult films question for you, Mark. Cult films.
Ooh, okay.
Brad and Janet are contestants on a reality television show called Marriage Maze in what cult dark comedy musical film released in 1981?
Why do you do this to me? I guess it wouldn't be a last question if it was an easy one, huh?
No, I can't put them here. That would be a dirty trick if it was easy. Wouldn't you feel tricked?
You know, I would feel tricked. Well.
Maybe it is a trick. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, that's much better. I mean, I don't know much about cult films. I mean, other than like, you know, The Room or whatever, which I know a little bit about.
Seen it once or twice.
You know, I don't know much about, I don't know much about Rocky Horror Picture, but I know that there's someone named Janet in it. Cause I know, damn it, Janet. Cause my mom used to say that all the time. I feel like it was made in the '70s, but I know it's a cult movie. So I'm going to go with Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh, Mark, you are very close. It's wrong.
Okay.
It's actually a parallel movie to Rocky Horror Picture Show called Shock Treatment. Shock Treatment. You're right. Rocky Horror came out in 1975, but Shock Treatment came out in 1981. Material was made for a Rocky Horror Picture Show sequel, but that was discarded when the original cast would not return, Tim Curry being the final nail in the coffin. So they took the material from that sequel, retooled it for a new project called Shock Treatment, which is a bit ahead of its time as far as critics are concerned, because it successfully satirizes reality TV series that don't exist yet at the time. So it's 1981. There's like a scene with like medical drama reality shows and stuff like that. Everybody, all the inhabitants of the town of Denton, where the movie takes place, which is outfitted with TV production gear. Everybody's whole goal is to have their own TV show one day. It's very much like reality right now, especially now that we're all streaming. It's even more pertinent, I think. So Shock Treatment is the name of the cult sequel to Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Huh. I'll be fucking damned. I had no clue that existed. I've never been a big Rocky Horror Picture guy, but, you know, it's still nice to know that stuff, and I had no fucking clue.
Yeah, I remember seeing it in high school. It's pretty campy. I'm not sure that it's going to hold up. I'm not sure that it's going to hold up. But it was actually another piece of background information that's kind of interesting. Written during a writer's strike from the Writers Guild. So that's part of the reason why it was shot in a warehouse, because it all had to be shot in like a single location gotcha. To avoid any disputes related to that.
Are you ready for your last question? I'm very proud of this one.
Okay, let's hear it.
It's a movie question. Big on movies. Right. I guess we've been maybe because we've been sitting at home a lot watching TV and movies. One of your favorite movies of all time, Space Jam. Mm. In Space Jam.
And so, yeah, this is not one of my favorite movies. No. Probably towards the top of my least favorites. But continue.
In Space Jam, Stan, played by Wayne Knight, comes into Michael Jordan's hotel room and tells him to get ready by doing what five things that doubled as promotion for products that Michael Jordan was spokesman for at the time.
Okay. Well, I'm not a fan of the movie Space Jam. I mean, you know, it's fine as kids' entertainment goes. It's not even fine. It's not good. I'm taking it back. It's not good. but this is a good question. I like this as a plot detail. I like these list style questions.
I like these too.
And this is it's cool because not only is it a plot detail, but it extends out into pop culture.
You know? Yes, yes. And that's what
very good, Mark. Very
kind of what I liked about it. Thank you. I thought you might like it.
So let's see here. He was an underwear spokesperson. Can't remember if it was Fruit of the Loom or Hanes. It was one of those two. I think it was Hanes. Can I give you these one at a time, and like you can just tell me when I get one wrong?
Is that how you want to do it?
Yeah.
Hanes is correct.
Okay.
Ding, ding, ding.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here. Nike shoes, right?
Lace up the Nikes. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, it was slip on your Hanes.
Slip on your Hanes.
Lace up your Nikes.
Mm-hmm. There's McDonald's.
I'll give it to you. It's Big Mac. It's grab a Big Mac on the way to the ballpark.
And then it's the next one has got to be Big Mac. You want a Coca-Cola?
I'm sorry, that's incorrect.
Mm.
It is another drink.
Sprite.
I'm sorry. No, it's a sports drink. It's Gatorade.
Oh, Gatorade.
Gatorade.
Okay.
And the last thing is a breakfast cereal.
Wheaties.
Wheaties, yes.
Wheaties.
The whole thing is slip on your Hanes, lace up your Nikes, take your Wheaties and your Gatorade, and we'll grab a Big Mac on the way to the ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
There's a really great, I know they did this with Mrs. Doubtfire, but there's a really great cut that someone does with his character where he comes off as being like this maniacal creep to Michael Jordan.
Recut trailer.
Yes, it's very, very good. It's very good.
Nice. Well, I guess well, that's it for this 92nd episode.
Big 92. Big this thing's 92. A grandfather.
We're moving on up.
I know.
Marching towards 100.
Getting close to that 100. Hopefully we're out of isolation by 100.
I was going
to
say, I wonder when
I would like
be.
To hug your body. It would be nice if 100 was the day that we got to be together again. I mean, hopefully we can be together again before then. But
we're going to open this thing up by 100. Don't you worry. Everything's going to open up by 100. It's going to be fine.
It's going to be great.
Yeah, let's hope so, Mark. Let's get to 100 in person. I hope
Indeed.
So.
Indeed.
All right. That concludes this episode of the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast. My name's Quizmaster Lee. Follow No Nonsense Trivia live. What am I saying? Live. I'm just so used to saying it now.
Come on now.
Streaming live. Follow No Nonsense Trivia on social media and Twitch for our upcoming live quiz stream. Thanks for listening. Join us every Monday morning for a new episode by subscribing to the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast on your favorite podcast platform. You can support the No-No in several ways. The easiest by sharing this episode on your social media accounts with your friends. We like it. You can also leave us a written review on your favorite podcast platform. We love it. You can support the podcast on Patreon by visiting our website and clicking the support link at the top, which will take you to our Patreon page. We want some more of it. Thanks, by the way, to our quiz daddies, Dylan, Tommy, Tim, and Gil.
It's Gil.
Thanks also to our team captains, Kristen, Fletcher, Rachel, Aaron, and David Holbrook. David Holbrook, David Holbrook.
David Holbrook.
And thanks also to our proverbial lightkeepers, Manu,
many of them,
Mo, Nina, Michael, Matthew, Luke, Marissa, Justin, Hank, Nicole, Cooper, Sean, Carly, Chris, Elise, Josh, and Lucas. Thank you.
Let me ask you a question. I'm sorry. Uh-huh. I just have to interrupt. Matthew, Michael, and Luke.
Yep.
Did you do that on purpose?
The biblical grouping?
Yeah.
No, I didn't. God did that, Mark.
Because there's a Mark in there, too. I'm trying to think of...
I don't think there's...
There isn't in there, but I'm trying to think in that Matthew, Mark, Luke, John.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I'm Mark. So there's Matthew, me, Luke, John. Seth is the next book. And we have Seth.
Where he's not Patreoning.
I know. But I'm just saying, like, it was just funny that you read all those three in that order where Mark and Seth are missing. But we're here in spirit.
Indeed.
All right, sorry.
You know who else is here?
Who else is here? Tell me about
them. Rumpelstiltskins! Paige, blah, 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 Kenya, blah. Jeff, Efren, Steven, Michael C.
Clorox.
Michael J.
Just Stay Home.
And Michael S.
Stay home for real, please.
Scrub your hands.
That too.
Scrub them up.
Scrub your hands and stay home.
If you'd like to write us with a rate my question or a missed correction, you can do so at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com. Or for the last time, no, I'm saying it again, 1-929-356-6966. Who, Mike Jones? 1-929-356-9.
Oh, yeah.
can't mess up the phone number. 1-929-356-6966. That's no. No Mike Jones. That's no. Please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at No Nonsense Trivia, and on Twitter at No Non Trivia.
Ah, what a mouthful.
We have a Facebook group. You can join as well. We're not done yet, Mark. I was just taking a breath. Just go onto Facebook and search for the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast and join us there. And finally, don't forget to leave us a rating on your favorite podcast service.
Five stars only.
Please.
Until next time,
no nonsense listeners,
have a great week.